Testing, 1, 2, 3. I'm speaking with Dr. Jadwiga Maurer, professor of Slavic languages and literature, who retired in May of 2001. We are speaking on November 29, 2001, at the Adams Alumni Center on the University of Kansas campus in Lawrence. Well, let's begin at the beginning, and if you can tell me where you were born and when.
I was born in 1930 in Kielce, Poland, which is a medium-sized city in Poland, which has grown a lot, I understand.
And what did your parents do?
My parents were teachers. My father taught at the high school, which of course in Europe at that time was much more highly regarded than it is here, teaching high school. My mother was also a high school teacher. She taught Polish literature, but she stopped working, as so many women did when I was born. And she taught maybe 3 years or so. They came to Kielce from other parts of Poland. That's where they got their positions at that time.
Where is that city in relation to, say, Warsaw?
Yeah, it's between Warsaw and Kraków in central Poland.
How do you spell it, just for the transcriber when she...
K-I-E-L-C-E.
K-I-E-L-C-E, okay. And were you the firstborn in the family, or do you have brothers and sisters?
No.
You're the only child.
Yes.
Yeah. And you said you were born in 1930, which of course brings us to the obvious question of, I guess, what happened during the war years, since Poland was such a battleground.
I am a survivor of the Holocaust, and I am, if I wanted to tell you, which I think wouldn't be terribly useful. Of all the places that I've been during the war, I couldn't possibly. We left Kielce in 1939 on foot, and then we had all kinds of adventures. I was in a convent school in the last year of the war. Before that, we were in Kraków. We were hiding in various places, etc. And at some point, I went to convent school. Last year of the war, we spent in Slovakia, which was a little bit different, although it was allied with Germany, so the occupation wasn't quite as stern as in Poland. Then we returned to Kraków, which was the place from which we left to Slovakia in 44. I went to school in Slovakia, and I went some to school in Poland just before the war, and a little bit during the war. After the war, we lived for a year in Gdansk, which you probably know as Danzig, and then we left for Munich with the idea of, this was then in 1946 in the so-called American zone, and there was no Germany then, and we were going to emigrate, but with one thing and another, I finished my schooling in Munich, and I also graduated from the University of Munich, so we were there for about 10 years, much longer than my parents intended.
Did you, when you were, you said you went to school for a time in Slovakia, did you speak the language?
Yes, I learned the language very quickly. Slovak is very similar to Polish.
Is it?
In the west Slavic group. I couldn't. I don't think I could put two words together now. I don't even know if I would understand everything. Mm-hmm. But at that time, it was very easy for me. I was reading in Slovak and speaking, and sometimes people didn't even recognize that I wasn't a Slovak. But I forgot it as quickly as I learned it.
Yeah, yeah. Did your parents find it more difficult to deal with the language than you as a child?
Yes, I think so. Yeah. Yes, yes. However, as I said, it's close to Polish. Naturally, it's different, but it's not too difficult to learn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, why were you in hiding? You said you had to.
Well, because I'm Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's why.
Oh, I see. Okay, I didn't realize that. So, but the whole family survived.
Yes.
Yeah. That. Amazing, really.
It is amazing. Yes, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It is amazing.
And do you, looking back on your experiences, then, do you find it sort of ironic that you ended up in Germany and going to German university?
No. See, everybody kind of hints at that or mm-hmm. asks that. Mm-hmm. Not at all, because there was a big exodus from Eastern Europe, and as I said in the beginning, Germany was a place where it was in the American zone. Munich was in the American zone of Germany. There was no Germany. It was mm-hmm. divided up in these zones, and this was the place to go if you wanted to leave Eastern Europe and go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And people went mostly to the United States, some went to Australia, some went to Canada. Those were the immigration countries. Mm-hmm. And at that time it was very natural. Now, after all these years, people often ask me ask me how I felt about it. It's a bit of a misunderstanding.
Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm.
It's an interpretation that they draw from knowing about Germany and knowing about Germany later on. But that wasn't. And then when we stayed, there was a very large community of people who also came from Eastern Europe. So. I went to German schools, but it wasn't quite like what people have in mind when they say you were in Germany.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Since the area you were in was in an American zone, did you have much contact with Americans at that time?
Not much, but I married an American eventually. So I don't know what to say. Not much, but the presence of Americans. Everything was Germany at that time, and much longer, sort of like an American colony, you know, in that mm-hmm. area. Mm-hmm. Not in the British zone. Mm-hmm. I don't know how it was there, and then of course the Russian zone. That was the East Germany later on,
right.
But the American zone, western parts of Germany, it was sort of like an American colony for many years.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Did you go to that zone deliberately?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
They were actually inviting people to come. There was at that time a governor, an American general. I think the High Commissioner was General Clay, and there's some other General McNarney, I think, was High Commissioner of Bavaria, where Munich is. And they invited people in, the refugees in. Of course, you have to think of it as Germany was already full of refugees mm-hmm. because of forced labor mm-hmm. and people came out of concentration camps and people who fled fled to the West mm-hmm. generally.
Mm-hmm.
There was this push to get to the West before the Russians
mm-hmm.
Closed the borders.
Right. Right.
So it wasn't like those were single, you know, those were like maybe, I don't know how it breaks down in numbers, but there was an enormous you can call it immigration, mm-hmm, I don't know, mm-hmm, pushed to the, yeah, to the West.
Mm-hmm. What did you possess at that time? Did you just have your clothing, and, or did you have some books and things like that from your old life in Poland?
No, we didn't have anything from the old life. However, we, like everybody else, acquired new things, mm-hmm, and we had an apartment. We have things that we bought. My father worked in various institutions that were refugee institutions, and later he was also a lecturer at the University of Marburg, and I don't know, those were different times, kind of hard to explain, but it was like a new life. Yeah. No, we didn't bring anything from Poland, I think most refugees, that's how most refugees lived, and there was some help from various organizations in the beginning, but people started working and studying, and it's kind of hard to explain, mm-hmm, it's true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When you started going to school in Munich, who were your teachers? Were they
That was a German school. A normal, ordinary German school.
Mm-hmm.
And of course I didn't know any German. My parents did. But there again, I, living in the country, even though we didn't have much traffic with the Germans really, I learned. In the beginning I had private lessons to help me out, etc.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then when you live in a country, you learn it differently, and I learned rather quickly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you must have a facility for languages to a certain degree, maybe.
I suppose.
Yeah, but when you went to, I guess, what I would call high school,
uh-huh,
during your high school, uh-huh, years, did you have it in mind that you were planning to go on to university at that
point?
Oh,
yes. My parents raised me with the idea, even during the war, that I'll be going to the university.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a given sort, mm-hmm, of thing that, yeah.
Right. What were you interested in studying at that point? Did you have certain subjects that you liked better than others?
Yes, I studied English literature, Slavic languages and literatures, which was a different department, of,
mm-hmm,
course, and history. You had to have one main field and two other fields, minors, so to speak. I say so to speak because you wrote your dissertation if you were going for the PhD in your major field, but in your minor fields, you were examined almost the same way as,
mm-hmm,
in the major fields.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm,
the system was a little different, and the German system evolved in the meantime too. It's different now. I couldn't tell you exactly what,
right,
how they do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you chose the University of Munich because it was there.
I lived
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
And I lived there.
And did you live at home and go,
yes,
to school?
Mm-hmm. I always lived at home. Actually, I was thinking about the other day that, unlike other people, most of my colleagues, I've never lived alone. I've always lived with my parents, and then when I got married,
mm-hmm,
I lived with my husband,
mm-hmm,
and my family. And I went to the university, I lived at home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you recall any particular teachers at the university that,
oh, yes,
were inspiring to you?
Yes, actually all my professors were inspiring, and they were all famous people in their fields.
Mostly men?
All three of those in these subjects were men.
Mm-hmm.
There were, I don't think that there were more than maybe two or three women at that time, professors at the University of Munich. One was, I remember, in medicinal chemistry, and one associate professor was in history. I would say maybe there were two others, yeah. But that was it. Mm-hmm. There were whole departments that never had a lecturers. There were women lecturers mm-hmm. on mm-hmm. the lower levels, but on the higher levels, faculty was all male.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This wasn't, of course, on the books anywhere, but that's
right.
how it was.
Right, of course. I sort of interrupted you in terms of asking you about the people who inspired you. I'd like to go back to that a little bit, and if you mm-hmm. could tell me a little bit about some of those people.
Well, when you say inspired, maybe we are not thinking exactly of the same thing. I mean, they were people who were who were famous in their fields and who were very good lecturers mm-hmm. and inspired that way for scholarship, for studying, for research. I wouldn't say that they inspired me in any particular
a personal way.
Human
yeah, yeah.
human
yeah.
way. But that in Europe was not a concept. I think in my parents' time and before the war, during the whole 20th century, I think that was a concept that was fairly foreign to the European university mm-hmm. because there were large numbers of students, and of course you could get acquainted, and I mm-hmm. did with some of mm-hmm. my professors, but they didn't take much interest in students' affairs, and conversely students yeah. lived by different
yeah.
in a different world.
Yeah.
So this how the way we have it now, it's much more there are more relationships between students and professors, but I don't know how it is now in Europe. I think that the huge crowds of students in Germany still are not conducive to one-on-one
yeah.
anything.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it certainly was true when I was in college in the 1960s. You know, there was no I didn't know my professors, you know, I didn't, I would never think of calling them by their first name or anything
no.
like that, you know, I didn't call them on the telephone. I mean, I know what you're talking about. While you were going through college, when did you decide how did you come to the decision that you were going on for graduate work?
Well, in Germany, there is no college. Or you can say there's no graduate work.
Mm-hmm.
You go through the university. You start in let's say 4 years. You finish your courses, and it's for the PhD. You have to take, let's say, in each field 2 seminars and this and that, the other thing. Sort of like we have here too. You have requirements. But those requirements were at that time, it didn't mean that everybody who took these seminars was going to get a PhD. On the other hand, if you wanted a PhD, you had mm-hmm. to go take these
mm-hmm.
seminars.
Mm-hmm.
I decided to finish. And I never thought of dropping out. And because I wasn't going to stay in Germany, in my mind, or because I wasn't going to work for the state and be a teacher,
mm-hmm.
I might have become a lecturer. I had an offer to become a lecturer in Polish from the University of Munich. Because I thought I might go somewhere else. It was very vague, but the immigration was always looming somewhere. And
mm-hmm.
I decided to get a PhD because that is more universal mm-hmm. than getting the boards, what amounts to what's called a state exam,
mm-hmm.
which is almost the same in terms of requirements,
mm-hmm.
but it would only qualify you to teach in German schools and whatever, and you might get a job like on a newspaper or something. But I thought, a PhD was a PhD, and if you wanted to get the state boards, you didn't have to write dissertation, etc. I thought the scholarship was more interesting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What did you write your dissertation on? Do you remember?
Yes, I remember, and it's been published. It's in a book. The reason I was sighing, sort of, is that for many people, it's very esoteric. I wrote it on the pluperfect tense in Polish, and I'm not going to go into long explanations. The pluperfect tense in Polish officially does not even exist. So it's a little complicated.
I can understand why you sighed. I won't ask any more questions about your dissertation.
But I'm warning you, this may not be the most interesting subject. Let's say grammatical linguistic.
Mm-hmm,
So later I switched to literature. I thought I did in linguistics what interested me and what I was good at, but I wasn't going to go into it anymore.
So you were interested in it as an academic study, but it's not what you wanted to do with your life or how you wanted your career to develop?
No, even in academic study, I was more interested in literature. But the professor, the main professor in Slavic languages and literatures, as I said, a famous person in his field, Professor Koschmider, was a linguist.
Mm-hmm.
And so while he would have accepted a literary topic for a dissertation, I don't think he would have been that happy. So I decided this was interesting enough. And I passed my exams and the dissertation together, summa cum laude, which was almost an unprecedented feat in Germany. So apparently I chose well.
I would say so. I would say so. And when did you get your degree? What year?
50.
Oh, we went 56, through this.
55
or 56. Yeah. And
55, maybe.
And your parents were alive through this whole time,
yes.
And
yes.
I assume very,
yes,
very proud of what
you
had accomplished.
Yes, they were very pleased that I finished and that I did so well. I, however, later on decided that linguistics, I still taught linguistics at Berkeley when I came, but I decided that literature was of more interest to me later on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you get your degree, and then what happens? What do you decide to do?
I didn't really decide anything. I had some offers for jobs, but that's somewhat beside the point. I met my future husband.
Mm-hmm.
He was an exchange student. He was at that time at the University of Chicago finishing a master's. And then he was drafted into the army and came back to Germany as a soldier. And we got married in 56 in summer,
mm-hmm,
56. So
in Germany.
So there was no really, my mind, I didn't think that I would live much longer in Germany.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was the turn of events, really, that, you know, here I was a person who basically was almost a child, came to Germany in order to emigrate,
mm-hmm,
but I didn't. And now I was on my way to the United States,
mm-hmm,
anyway.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, did you know English at this point?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, English was one of my minors, and I would say, I wouldn't say that when I came here in 56 I could have talked to you like I do now, but almost.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I was, the language was not that alive, so to speak, but yes, I knew English.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I knew English, I could read. I mean, I could read books and everything.
You were comfortable in English.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And when did you come back? When did you and your husband come back to the States?
Well, we came in let me see. Yeah, I came in the fall of 56.
So, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. To where? Where did you?
He, at that time, his parents lived in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. He's from Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And so we stayed there and for a little while, then we went back to Germany and lived with my parents, and he worked for Radio Free Europe. He was a better class mailman for them in the mailroom. And he tells me that a lot of famous people started in the mailroom. And then we came back, and he decided to continue his studies and also go for a PhD. And by that time, we had a son, and we decided on Berkeley because there were three Slavic departments at that time that really counted in the United States. Mm-hmm. There was at Harvard, Berkeley, and Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
And the two Ivy League schools were very expensive, of course, and we didn't have any money to speak of. And so we thought Berkeley might be a place where we might get something. And he had a GI Bill and he had a TA ship. But after a year at Berkeley, I got an offer and I had a wonderful job. In fact, I was an assistant professor and I was promised tenure at Berkeley. And in fact, when I look back at it now, the way women live now, I don't think any woman would have left that job to follow her husband. But I did, because that was what people did in those days.
Right.
So we lived, I taught Polish literature and some linguistics indeed still.
And so this was, you taught Polish literature and linguistics at Berkeley?
Yes.
Mm-hmm, as an assistant professor?
Yes. Mm-hmm. As a lecturer first and then as an assistant professor. I was on tenure track and I was promised tenure, but when he finished, it was very strict. I don't know if they would have employed my husband or not, but it was very strict, and that they didn't employ at Berkeley their own students. They just simply didn't do that.
Yeah.
So it was an idea that maybe if you went away for 2 years and came back, it sounded awfully complicated. And there were plenty of jobs at that time.
Yeah. Now, what year was this when he finished?
Or
approximately?
Six. Well, he finished in, we moved to Indiana, to Bloomington, Indiana in 65.
Mm-hmm.
But he was still writing his dissertation.
Mm-hmm.
But we had two jobs, two positions in two departments.
At Bloomington?
At Indiana.
Oh, at Indiana, yeah.
Yeah, Bloomington. Mm-hmm. Bloomington,
so you left Berkeley also with the intention of getting another academic job.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. I already looked for it when we decided to move. I looked, except that at that time it was rather easy because there were Slavic departments were being built up by the government and expanding, and there was coming from Berkeley, where, as I said, there were only three departments in the whole country that counted, you could only go down, so to speak.
Yeah.
You couldn't really go up.
Yeah. Yeah.
So at that time, it was easy. We had offers from other places like Illinois. We had an offer from Yale, but it was sort of tentative for me, so we decided not to take that chance.
What was it like moving from Berkeley to Bloomington?
It was like moving to a foreign country. Totally different. And I, even now, some friends from Bloomington who were once my students, they say they remember that I said one day, "Oh, I know how the British felt in India." It was town and gown, totally separate, totally separate. And it wasn't bad, it was just different, kind of colonial.
Did you ever see that movie about the skate or the bicyclist?
Yes.
Did that bring back memories when you saw that? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that was definitely a town and gown kind of thing in that movie, I remember.
Yeah, but that's very true. I don't know how it is now exactly, but I suspect it's not much different.
Mm-hmm. So you were hired at...
I was an associate professor.
At that time, that you became an associate professor of Slavic languages and literature again.
Yes, mm-hmm. at Indiana University in Bloomington.
And your husband was in the German department?
Yes, and he was an assistant professor, and this was a huge department. They had like 14 assistant professors or something. So he wasn't terribly happy there. And we had two children by then, a son and a daughter, and he went to the MLA convention, not with the idea of looking for a job at all, but he got an offer from Kansas because some people that we knew at Berkeley were in the German department in Kansas, at KU. So then we moved here, and that was in
68. Mm-hmm. And again, did you come with the idea, or did you already have contacts set up to have a job here?
I did not. It wasn't a package deal or anything. And the reason, well, there may have been more reasons that we didn't negotiate anything, but the main reason was that I had started writing and publishing in Polish in emigre papers, and I started writing essays and fiction, and I thought I'll take a year or two off and write.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started working again in 1970, I got a very prestigious award for a book, a collection of short stories, so I took a job when they offered it to me, but we didn't. Looking back, I wouldn't recommend it to people now, because now there's a few jobs and the market is so tight that it's a great risk to do that at that time. Shortly afterwards, there weren't that many jobs all of a sudden.
So you hit a lucky time, really. Yeah.
And the market is always, academic market's always up and down, as you well know, and it's very hard to figure out. Now my daughter is, our daughter is up for, will be up for tenure next year.
Mm-hmm. Where is she?
She's at Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign.
Right. When you said you wanted to write, and you wrote some short stories that won an award. Was this all in Polish?
Yes.
You writing totally in Polish?
Yes.
Yes. And why were you writing in Polish? I mean, just...
I really don't know. I always expressed myself in fiction in that language, and now I'm all of a sudden a well-known writer also in Poland. People write to me. I wrote two volumes of short stories, and a lot of them scattered in papers, periodicals. And when the communist regime was overthrown, I had possibilities in Poland, but of course, this is my home. I would never move. I can't tell you why. I don't know. I'm a person who believes very much in expression in a certain language, in the medium, and to me, for more lyrical things or fiction, in essays, Polish is the language in which I think, this is all subjective, I express myself the best. However, I have published in English in scholarly papers, and the thing is that once you separate like that, it's very hard to do anything else.
So Poland is the language of the imagination,
apparently,
and English is the language of scholarship.
You put it better than I could.
Well, I don't know about that. I was just trying to understand. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't understand it myself.
Did you bring your children up to be bilingual?
No.
No.
No, they never showed any interest. Well, vaguely to please me sometimes. And I tell you another thing. It is not easy to do that when both parents speak some other language, but when one parent only one, my husband still does no more than maybe three words of Polish, and only that, then he recognizes them, he happens to recognize them, so nobody showed any strong interest. And also they are in professions that my Steve is a lawyer and freelance journalist, and Elizabeth is an economist. Those are not exactly the fields where people want to learn more languages.
So you took a couple of years off and devoted yourself more to fiction. Then what happened to bring you back into academics?
The department, there were some people whom I didn't know in the history department and in political science who knew about me, and they went to the Slavic department and asked them why they don't make me an offer. I didn't even know about it. Then they made me an offer, but it wasn't an offer that I really wanted. So I don't remember exactly how it was, but after half a year or so, they made me another offer, and this is so long ago now. At any rate, I became a visiting associate professor.
And what year was this?
That was, let's see, we came 68. That was in 70.
70. You came a visiting associate. Lecturer, you said?
No, professor.
Okay. Professor, visiting associate professor in 1970.
Well, that visiting, of course, was only to keep me out of the regular.
Right.
But I was, I think they only kept me on that a year.
And then, let's say, after a year, you became just
associate
professor.
Yeah, Slavic languages.
And then you were on the regular. At that point, when you became an associate, were you given tenure automatically, or did you have to go through the hoops that most people have to go through?
No, I wasn't given a tenure automatically, but I don't think it was terribly nerve-wracking or involved.
When did you become a full professor?
Maybe like in 73 or 4, and I was also at that time acting chair of the department.
How big was the department at that time?
Well, it was fairly big for being a relatively new department, I guess. It had, it only had three full professors, four with me, which is about what it has now, and they had two associate professors and a couple of assistant professors. For a Slavic department in the Midwest, it was fairly big.
When did the department get, when did it come into being at KU, do you know?
Probably, no, I don't know exactly, but probably maybe in the early 60s already. I don't know.
Was there renewed interest or a renewed push for Slavic languages as a result of Sputnik and those kinds of
there
things?
Was.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, there was, yes. There was at that time, Slavic departments were doing very well because there was some support from the government for quite a long time after Sputnik. They hired a lot of people, but they hired, and there were quite a few graduate students
here at KU.
Yes.
Yes.
It was one. It still is one of the. There's nothing between here and California that offers PhDs.
Really.
in the states around us don't have a PhD program in Slavic, like Nebraska, Iowa, Oklahoma, Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have any.
Was PhD. That is that because of a? Was there any one person or a couple of people who pushed for graduate work at the department here? Is that what happened, or?
I think it was a combination of things. There were a few people who pushed for Slavic studies in general and supported the department. One of them was Professor Backus, who's been now late Professor Backus, dead for many years. And I think there was a lot offered to KU for the Slavic program from Washington, and they hired a person who, Professor Conrad, who's still in the department, who was at that time in Texas and who had been a student here. He's a native of Kansas City, I think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they built up that way, that they simply hired people, but there was money. There was also money in for exchange programs, which were funded by the government, but ran out of KU, which
mm-hmm.
helped a great deal, I
mm-hmm.
think.
Mm-hmm. So you felt like the administration was supportive of Slavic
yeah.
languages at that time?
I think so, and I think it was supportive because that was the thing to do. I mean, if you're being offered money,
you don't turn it down.
Turn it down. So I think that's how it was,
mm-hmm.
and it went very well throughout the 70s and part of the 80s. We also have this institute. Russian and East European Studies, Slavic and East European Studies, and the director, Maria Carlson, is very good at running that thing, and we still get support from Washington,
mm-hmm.
from the Department of Education.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, this is a little bit different. This is the age of grants now that,
yeah.
you know, everybody
yeah,
wants
exactly.
a grant,
mm-hmm.
and so it's a little different.
Mm-hmm.
But
who would, this is a little off the subject
yeah.
of your own career, but just for my own interest, if you, a Slavic languages department, if they're writing grants, who would they be writing the grants to? Who would be the most likely people to give them money?
Well, the government still gives grants, and there are foundations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All the well-known foundations, then there are special branches of foundations that have to do with Eastern Europe,
mm-hmm.
and you'd be putting in for those grants
mm-hmm.
that are available from them. There's not a great deal, maybe. There's not maybe as many institutions as in sciences, but there are foundations that give grants.
Mm-hmm. Enough that you can
yeah.
you can usually count
yeah.
on somebody to write to and maybe
yeah.
maybe get some money.
Yeah,
yeah.
And this has become very fashionable or the thing to do, so a lot of people apply for grants.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Let's go back to a little bit earlier time. When you came to Lawrence, did you have the same feeling that you had when you went to Bloomington, or did you feel like this was maybe going to be, you were going to like it here, or how did you feel about Lawrence when you first came?
Well, first of all, the big change was and probably would be always from California
yeah.
to anything else, and from Berkeley to Bloomington. Because I already lived in Bloomington, I didn't find Lawrence
mm-hmm.
outlandish
yeah.
or anything.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think life here was good, and I thought it was going to be good, and we settled in much better than we had in Bloomington. One, I don't regret leaving Bloomington at all, but one of the things that I think was wrong with Bloomington was that we didn't we lived in university housing, and it was all kind of not permanent. You could feel that this wasn't permanent.
Yeah.
But there wasn't any shock.
Mm-hmm. How old were your children when you came to Lawrence?
Well, Steve was born in 58, and we came in to Lawrence in 68.
Mm-hmm. So 10. Yeah.
Yeah, and Elizabeth was born in 64.
Mm-hmm.
So she was little.
I've heard a lot of people talk. I don't have children myself, but I've heard a lot of people talk about how when they came to Lawrence, they sort of had a feeling this was going to be a good place to bring up children. Did you have the same feeling?
Yes, it was sophisticated enough, but small enough, and they didn't seem to have any problems with crime or mm-hmm. you know, all those things that mm-hmm. you would have if you went to a big city. Mm-hmm. It didn't have the problem of public versus private school.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't have private schools. It had good public school
mm-hmm.
and schools, and there was no problem mm-hmm. of that type, which you have in many other places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
So
when you first came to KU, how many? Sort of approximately, how many women were in the university at that time? I mean, did you feel like you were in a real minority as a woman professor?
Oh, yes, definitely. There were very few. Mm-hmm. You could really, cast my mind.
Okay, we were talking about women at the university when you came.
I think that the statistics are right when they say that there are about 12% hovers between 9 and 12% of women full professors, associate professors, I don't remember exactly what it is, but maybe 30%, I don't know, and then assistant professors is almost 50%. So while it wasn't like that at all at that time, the upper levels have changed very little,
mm-hmm.
and nobody knows why that is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Obviously, women drop out.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like that at that time, because even on assistant professor levels, there were not many women.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say any. I was the first woman in my department,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and for a long time.
The only woman?
Yeah, for a long time.
Was that difficult, or did you find got on with your job and
it wasn't difficult because I was used to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Already.
Yeah.
There were two women at Berkeley. There was another woman at Berkeley, and there were women at Berkeley, but they were not on the regular tenure track.
Mm-hmm.
They were lecturers,
mm-hmm.
and they were everywhere where I was, including Munich, women lecturers. This wasn't tenure track,
mm-hmm.
and this wasn't going anywhere.
Yeah, like people in the English department, you know.
Yeah. So that I was used to, but they were very, very few women on the regular
mm-hmm.
faculty tenure track.
Did the women who were on the faculty at that time, did they try to get together and offer support to each other or be any kind of a voice in the university?
That came later.
Mm-hmm.
That came later.
How much later would you say?
Oh, 10 years maybe.
Mm-hmm.
10 years later. And I don't think much came of it. The women were trying to organize at a certain time, and I can't tell you what year that was exactly,
mm-hmm.
but yes, and there was even an association that even negotiated with the administration. That must have been late 70s,
mm-hmm.
and there were meetings and all that, but it kind of, as the big push was made and women elsewhere were protesting, etc., all these local associations that fell apart because the women that were seriously interested in something, in changing something, they joined these other national whatever. But I have never seen that much organizing here on campus. I haven't seen any particular enthusiasm. Saying that there were certain people, there were certain women who were trying to organize. I remember when I came and they told me, now this is insignificant, but to me this was so strange, when they told me when I got the job that I had to remain as a dependent on my husband's health insurance. I couldn't understand why I couldn't have. And they explained to me that this is the same thing. It isn't the same thing. And then later they had to change that. So there was some pressure, but the pressure came from somewhere else, from above, from somewhere else. Very little came from within the university.
From within.
Very little.
What about salaries? Were you paid less than your...
Yes, and my salary until the very end suffered from that.
Did it?
Yeah, I think it suffered from two circumstances. One, that women were generally offered less, simply on the theory that they're going to accept it, because what are they going to do? And also that I was married, and they kind of looked at the family income. They kind of looked at, they didn't say so, but you could sense that there was this, so yes, that's... women's salaries were lower, and you didn't need any study to see that. Our salaries are public, and so you could see that they were lower.
They were just lower across the board. How difficult was it to raise a family and be a full-time professor? I mean, was that something that you were used to? I mean, you clearly had been doing this for a while.
Yes, I think that it is difficult, and it's a lot of it is in the attitude, how you start out, and that's why I don't believe in this coming later, or wait till your children are bigger, wait for this, wait for that. I don't think that's a good idea. But we set out to have these two careers so that both of us work. I was never the full-time housewife, but my husband was never the full-time house husband. But we shared a lot of things. We shared a lot. So I don't know. I can't compare. It is difficult. My daughter is in that situation now. It is difficult.
Yeah, I would think. How long, I mean, when you first became or entered the department here, were most of your students male, would you say, and did that change over time?
I don't know. There were a lot of women in graduate school in languages, but a lot of them never finished. So most of the people who finished were men. That's true, but there were some women who finished, and there were women around and in graduate students. I can't tell what the proportion was.
What sorts of things did you teach in those early days when you first entered the department? What were some of your...
I taught Polish language on the advanced level, and we always had a TA for first year. We still do, or they still do. Polish literature, comparative Slavic literatures, and as I said in the very beginning, I taught linguistics. I had seminars on various authors, and Then later, I also taught Slavic women writers, which became fashionable that each department had to have something in women's mm-hmm. studies.
Mm-hmm. Was this of interest to you anyway, or
yeah,
was yeah?
Yeah, it was. We don't have that course anymore, but I don't know. Over the years, I taught a lot of different courses. It was also up and down with the Slavic studies. There were some years where you simply had to teach language. There were always students for language.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe one course in the spring or something in literature. We also have individual study, and that is very important in smaller fields, because if someone wants to go and do a PhD, let's say in Polish, we don't have enough courses for that person. So they have to take individual study topics. We have a course called Topics where you can accommodate such people if that's vacated for something that they need. Readings, all that individual study.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you think you liked being in an apartment where there was a graduate program as opposed to not?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And we have very few graduate students now, and I still think that our department was always, as long as I can remember, geared to graduate studies.
Mm-hmm.
I think also that the money that came in and still comes in, like the class, the government stipends, are for graduate studies.
Mm-hmm.
Very little is done for undergraduates.
Mm-hmm.
I guess with the idea that they have to go through college somehow.
Yeah.
And that's it. So.
Now, would most of the people who go into graduate work in Slavic languages, let's say in Polish literature or whatever, would they already have a fairly good command of the language? Would that be an absolute necessity?
No. In fact, there are some places where you have to, what now is fashionably called heritage students, like Chicago, Detroit, where these people are of Polish descent, and maybe bring from home some knowledge, various degrees, it varies greatly. But the places I've been in always had a cross-cut of American students as everywhere else. Somebody asked me to write an article, this person is in England, on ethnic origin of my students, and I turned it down. First of all, it's not that interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, I'm not that interested in the whole thing. But I think that this is a mistaken idea. Often when people look at an American university and they hear that the Polish courses, and probably goes for other languages, they assume that these are people from the Polish community, that nothing could be further from the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And these are various people who for various reasons study. There is a small percentage or percentage at times of people who married into the Polish community or who married a Pole, both men and women.
Mm-hmm.
But this is usually short-lived.
Yeah.
They take a couple of courses and that's it.
Yeah.
But no, most serious graduate students or even undergraduates are, something happened that they started Slavic languages.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them started Russian, because Russian is everywhere. And then they switched, or they took it as a minor, or something happened that they are now in Polish. Lately, there's been a group of people who were in Poland teaching English, and they got interested in studying Polish when they came back.
Mm-hmm.
So we have some of, in fact, we have a master's in Polish next week. I'm still on that. That young woman who taught English for a couple of years
in Poland.
It's her Polish quite good.
Have you done any translating? Do you
No.
Does that interest you at all, or?
Not particularly, no. But I appreciate if somebody's a good translator. I think it's a very difficult and ungrateful job.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I haven't done any
mm-hmm.
myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You said when you first entered the department, or shortly thereafter, you became acting co-chair or acting chair?
No, I was acting chair.
Acting chair.
Yeah, that was when our chair went for a year to Russia.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, and they voted on it, and see, I was the only woman at that time, but they voted me in.
Did you like it? Did you like that role, or
yes,
did you like administration?
Yes, for that time, that role was quite good. I don't know. Administration has changed so much now. I wouldn't want it now.
Mm-hmm.
Because the chairs are always writing memos to answering what it is we all do all the time, and I'm sort of on the defensive all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like
mm-hmm.
that very much.
Thousands of mission statements,
yeah.
and that sort
yeah.
of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. A statement of this, a statement of that, or the 5-year plan for the future.
Exactly. What did what led you to think about retiring?
Well, I think that this is one of the things that the person has to decide for themselves. And now that there is no mandatory retirement, there'll be both people who retire maybe too early and people
mm-hmm.
who hang on
forever.
Forever. So I decided that this was, I've been for 40 years
mm-hmm.
in teaching,
mm-hmm.
and I want to write still. And I just decided, my husband also decided that it was enough.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there are people who have a very hard time quitting, and I don't think I did.
Mm-hmm.
I am retired, but I still take an interest in the department,
mm-hmm.
and I have an office which I share in with my former student,
mm-hmm.
who is an instructor. I don't know. I just thought it was time.
I really
didn't give it any other thought.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I first went on this phased-in retirement,
yeah.
but my husband didn't. He just quit one day. That was it.
That was it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Over the years that you were in the department, did you see any changes in students in terms of, you know, their, well, I won't even ask you a leading question. Did you observe any changes that?
You know, graduate school, I had very few undergraduate
mm-hmm.
students. Now, because of the subjects that I taught, and because of teaching Polish literature, which was required for a PhD, but some people took it, undergraduates also, but there was always a majority of graduate students. I would say graduate students are pretty much the same everywhere,
yeah.
and I don't know, maybe they have changed some, but it's not that noticeable
mm-hmm.
to me.
Mm-hmm.
Undergraduates, everybody says that they have changed
yeah.
some, but graduate students, I suppose if somebody decides to get a PhD or even a master's, they're usually pretty much the same type
yeah. yeah.
of commitment. They have to have some commitment.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think having spent most of your time with graduate
mm-hmm.
students, you wouldn't necessarily have the same feeling as somebody who had spent more time
yeah.
with the undergraduates. What about KU as a university? How would you evaluate the university as a whole? Maybe your opinions have changed over the years about that as well.
No, I always thought that it was a very good university. It's a, what they call a research university. It has a very good library. And I think the professors here, this may sound cynical, but like professors everywhere else, they could be at Harvard and Yale
mm-hmm.
and Berkeley. I also think that this idea that students have that there are good professors and bad professors, and it's a lot of nonsense. I think that you get something from everybody who is talked that much and studied that much. Now, unless a person is completely gone, or you know, there are sometimes people
sometimes
or crazy. Yes, but excluding, I think it's you can study yourself to death if you take the proper courses and you know, that heavy. I don't know there are universities where things are stricter, but there are universities where things are much more lax. So I don't know. I know that we get these ratings as a play school, but then again, it's the undergraduate mostly.
Yeah.
You know, we get in these blue books, whatever they're called. I don't know. And from that point of view, maybe the undergraduate programs are not as serious as I think.
So you feel like KU was a good place for you,
yes.
You have no major quarrels with the university as a whole.
No, I don't.
Or the leadership.
If you go into the central administration, then there are things that we, for instance, both my husband and I think that much too much attention is paid to the sports, you know, the sports as a legitimate integral part of the university. But then, of course, those are complaints that people have when they have certain ideas how things should be.
Do you feel like the leadership, has stayed pretty much the same in terms of their goals and aims from the time that you came until now?
Probably not, but it's hard for me to put my finger on, because there are so many facets and aspects to it. I don't know. I mean, at times the leadership doesn't seem to pay too much attention to the college or to the humanities at all, and other times it seems like they try to prop up weak programs. So it's hard. It's hard for me to tell. I think much depends on the deans of the college, and I have worked now so many years here that I remember various deans, and everybody has their favorite or the ones that are not so favorite. I don't know. I think if you are in a central administration, like if you were an associate dean or something like that, you might have better idea of what's right and what's wrong.
You said that you hope to do some writing. Are you going back to fiction and that sort of writing?
Yeah, I write fiction mostly, yes. And I would like to write something. I don't know yet exactly what, but short stories and stories, the cycle of stories maybe.
Do you go back to Poland very often?
I have been, I have been first time in Poland since we left in 46. In 64.
Really?
Yeah. And then I was invited by Polish television in 94. In 95, I was invited by the Polish television, which is a state run television, for an interview for a show. And so I was there again, and I was going to go to Poland. I had it all organized, or they had it all organized, on September 11th. And I was ready to go to the airport. So now I don't know.
But you may try to reschedule that possibly, or
not in the same manner, because I was going to speak at a conference, and I don't know this opportunity, you know, there are always conferences, but this was one that I would have liked to go to. Anyway, yes, I will go sometime.
Going back a way back, I had meant to ask this earlier and we got sidetracked. When you married your husband uh-huh. and moved to America, your parents stayed in Munich?
Yes.
And did they ever come over to see you?
Oh, yes, many times.
Did they?
Yes.
But they didn't settle here.
Well, it was hard at that time because of health insurance and various things. It was very hard for Europeans of a certain age to come here and settle permanently. They did stay several months each time. They were here in Lawrence at least twice that I remember, maybe three times.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They were at Bloomington, they were at Berkeley.
Do you think you will continue living in Lawrence, or do you
yes.
you think so?
Well,
you
yes.
wouldn't consider moving to California, say? Or
I don't know. Moving is always very stressful
yes,
and difficult. And moving just without any particular reason, I don't know. We thought about it. I thought about it, but probably we'll probably stay. Maybe we'll take some trips or go somewhere in the winter and
mm-hmm.
in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
But it's difficult to move from the way it is that there is really no particular purpose. There would be no particular purpose in moving
yeah.
permanently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if
mm-hmm.
you had some purpose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, some people want to get away from
yeah.
the weather.
Yeah, the weather mm-hmm. would be the only thing, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Hot summer, cold winter.
Yeah, but a lovely fall.
Yes.
At least this fall was lovely, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Is there anything that we haven't talked about that concerns your life and career that you think we should talk about? Any questions that I haven't asked that you think might be important to be included?
I can't think of anything. I think we touched upon everything. You touched upon everything asking questions. I don't really know that there is anything. It's We talked about my writing and my teaching, and maybe I should mention that this year before I retired, I received an award which I particularly liked, and that is from the Center for Teaching Excellence for graduate teaching,
mm-hmm.
so again,
mm-hmm.
graduate teaching,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was the first award given for graduate teaching.
Ah, that is an honor.
Yeah, and I particularly like that because that was voted in by our students.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So,
are you still in touch with former graduate students?
Yes. Yes, I am. And I see them at conferences, and a lot of them are professors now.
Mm-hmm.
And there are also students in the department that I taught that are still not finished with their dissertations,
mm-hmm.
and they have jobs here,
mm-hmm.
like in a language lab. Or,
right,
you know.
Right.
And those I see. And yeah.
So will you continue to, say, serve on their committees until they're finished?
Not unless they particularly
ask
for me. No,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't volunteer for anything, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I'm retired, so.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Do you have grandchildren at this point?
We have one grandchild. Elizabeth has a son
mm-hmm.
who's 3 years old. And
I assume traveling to Illinois might be on your agenda
yeah,
for some of the
yeah,
time.
Yeah, some of the time.
Yeah.
Yes. Other than, you know.
So mainly you want to get back to your writing and
yeah.
see where that takes you at this phase
yeah.
of your life.
Yeah, we may travel some too, although Neither one of us is a great traveler,
mm-hmm.
even though we lived in so many places.
Yeah.
And now with the all the restrictions and
hassles.
Traveling by air mm-hmm. is just not, it's not very pleasant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, if you can't think of anything else, I thank you very much for agreeing to be interviewed.
Well, thank you for asking me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we will. Whoops.